welcome everyone to this week's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is working with environmental justice communities. Environmental justice means focusing attention on the concerns of community members who are suffering because local pollution exceeds the norms in other communities that may be whiter or wealthier. When CCLers want to build relationships with environmental justice organizers, it's really critical to understand past and present injustices, to move at the speed of trust and relationships, and to bring humility and respect to our conversations. So tonight's session is going to give us a background on the environmental justice movement, as well as providing strategies for building those relationships. I'll put a link where you can follow along with us tonight with our slides, as well as the training where you can find this. But with that, I want to make sure to pass the baton to our presenters tonight. And thank you all again for making time to join us. We look forward to a really empowering conversation.
Thanks. And yeah, the first thing I want to share is that part of this slide deck was actually adapted from a deck that's available for your use on CCL Community. And we're thankful to Graham Edmondson, who built the deck, Kimmy Way, who provided a direct EJ perspective, and many others in the action team, on the EJ action team, for giving input on the content. The deck has been specifically designed for CCLers like you to talk to your chapter about EJ. So please consider talking to your chapter leader about getting some time on your chapter's meeting agenda so that everyone in your chapter can have a chance to learn more about EJ and how it applies to your local community.
So if we've done our job well today, we'll have covered these three main points. We're going to read and review the Jemez Principles for Democratic Organizing. We will talk about environmental justice, the environmental movement, and CCL. And then we're going to give an example of EJ outreach from a EJ outreach and education from a CCL chapter.
So hello from your three speakers. My name's Lisa Danz, and I'm speaking to you from my home in the traditional land of the Ohlone people in the area now known as San Francisco Bay Area.
Hi, I'm Sue Hughes-Smith, and I'm on the traditional land of the Haudenosaunee up in Rochester, New York. And I am serving as a volunteer for the Northeast Region Diversity and Inclusion. I'm the community ambassador working with Karina Ramirez, the director of Diversity and Inclusion for CCL.
Fantastic. And my name is Debbie Chang. I am the co-leader of the DC chapter, Traditional Lands of the Piscataway People. I also volunteer as on the Climate and Environmental Justice Action Team Steering Committee along with Lisa. Before we get started, I do want to acknowledge the current events of the tragedy in Atlanta. And as an Asian woman myself, in the spirit of letting people speak for themselves, I wanted to share this from the Asian Americans Advancing Justice, the one that's in Atlanta, and they put out the statement. We're heartbroken by these acts of violence. Six Asian women lost their lives. Now is the time to hold the victims and their families in our hearts and in our light. We're calling on our allies across communities of color to stand with us in grief and solidarity against racist violence in all its forms. When our most vulnerable community members are targeted, we all need to band together. And I'm going to put a link in the chat of this group, and you can find out more about how you can support.
And we'll be talking today about environmental justice, which comes as a response to the fact that there's a lot of environmental injustice in the world and environmental racism, which is one of the many manifestations of systemic racism. Many of us have probably heard that Black people are dying of COVID at disproportionate rates. And there are multiple reasons for this, including more exposure to COVID at work and more underlying health conditions, which can be traced to, among other things, poor air quality. So unhealthy work environments and pollution in the community have been causing premature deaths disproportionately in Black and Brown communities for quite a long time. And we're going to get into some principles pretty soon where you'll see that environmental justice demands solutions. And we also want to acknowledge the limitations that we have here. Debbie, did you want to get into the details about that?
Sure. So Lisa and I presume Sue and I don't come from environmental justice communities. Ideally in these presentations, we do want to hear directly from people who are in EJ communities for them speaking for themselves. You'll see this highlighted again in the Hamez principle that we'll be reading. But that said, we also don't want to ask EJ community members to do the labor of educating folks with privilege. So it's in this spirit that we lead this sort of one-on-one session. We're not gonna obviously be able to teach everything about justice and history in 60 minutes. So today will be very beginner. If you're familiar with these principles and concepts, we do ask for your patience and forbearance for people who are just entering the space. And we want to acknowledge the challenge of providing a learning space where people with privilege can learn and make mistakes that would also be safe for people who are impacted directly by these issues. We're certainly almost not going to get it perfect, and we want to acknowledge that tension and hold that with us as we move forward today. We're going to read the Hamez Principles for Democratic Organizing, and then we're going to follow with a few audience reflections. This is one of a few readings that we like to occasionally start off our Climate and Environmental Justice Action Team monthly calls with to remind us and ground us in justice principles. So we're gonna ask for 7 volunteers to take turns reading the intro and 6 principles. And we encourage everyone to add their reflections, comments, and questions in the chat as they come up, especially because we probably don't have time to get to everyone's reflections in tonight's webinar. So if you're on the phone or if you'd like to read on your own, you can find the reading if you Google search for the Hamez Principles for Democratic Organizing. And so if you're ready to read, you can use Zoom's raise your hand by finding the reactions at the bottom of your screen and clicking on the raise hand icon at the bottom, or you can type volunteer into the chat if you're on the phone and have the principles in front of you. I'll start with the meeting led by Southwest Network for Environmental and Economic Justice in Jemez, New Mexico. It was created in 1996. And then Smriti.
On December 6th to 8th, 1996, 40 people of color and European American representatives met in New Mexico for the working group meeting on globalization and trade. The EMS meeting was hosted by the Southwest Network for Environmental and Economic Justice with the intention of hammering and common understandings between participants from different cultures, politics, and organizations. The following EMS principles for democratic organization, democratic organizing were adopted by the participants.
Yeah, thank you, Smriti, for starting us off. That was really excellent. I'm gonna tell you first the 6 principles in summary. To be inclusive, emphasis on bottom-up organizing, letting people speak for themselves, work together in solidarity and mutuality, build just relationships among ourselves, and commitment to self-transformation. So democratic organizing, the idea, it's closely related to the concept of community organizing, where communities get together to build collective power for social change. Does that sound familiar? Because CCL's mission is to build political will by empowering individual breakthroughs in political power. So that's my favorite principle of CCL. And there is a nuance to democratic organizing. This is important to remember when partnering with environmental justice communities. Democracy, as you remember, means rule by the people. As Lincoln put it, of the people, by the people, for the people, right? Now, when CCLers like myself, someone with lots of privilege, enters into an environmental justice community, am I going in with an agenda? Or am I looking for ways to be led by the people of the community I'm working with? That would mean getting to know them beyond what they can do for me and for CCL. So the Hamez Principles for Democratic Organizing have been adopted by many, many environmental organizations, such as the Sierra Club, 350, NRDC, the People's Climate Movement, just to name a few. You can expect many activists in the EJ movement to be familiar with these principles. So we're gonna dive in with our 6 volunteer readers. And I think, Gergely, were you next?
Number 1, be inclusive. If we hope to achieve just societies that include all people in decision-making and assure that all people have an equitable share of the wealth and the work of this world, then we must work to build that kind of inclusiveness into our own movement in order to develop alternative policies and institutions to the treaties, policies under neoliberalism. This requires more than tokenism. It cannot be achieved without diversity at the planning table, in staffing and in coordination. It may delay achievement of other important goals. It will require discussion, hard work, patience, and advanced planning. It may involve conflict, but through this conflict, we can learn better ways of working together. It's about building alternative institutions, movement building, and not compromising out in order to be accepted into the anti-globalization club.
Thank you, Gurgly, for reading that. Next, can I have Carl Dance read number two?
Number two, emphasis on bottom-up organizing. To succeed, it is important to reach out into new constituencies and to reach within all levels of leadership and membership base of the organizations that are already involved in our networks. We must be continually building and strengthening a base which provides our credibility, our strategies, mobilizations, leadership development, and the energy for the work we must do daily.
Thank you, Carl. And next, Diana.
Number three, let people speak for themselves. We must be sure that relevant voices of people directly affected are heard. Ways must be provided for spokespersons to represent and be responsible to the affected constituencies. It is important for organizations to clarify their roles and who they represent and to assure accountability within our structures.
So sorry, I was muted. Kenya, could you read the next one?
Working together in solidarity and mutuality. Groups working on similar issues with compatible visions should consciously act in solidarity, mutuality, and support each other's work. In the long run, a more significant step is to incorporate the goals and values of other groups with your own work in order to build strong relationships. For instance, in the long run, it is more important that labor unions and community economic development projects include the issue of environmental sustainability in their own strategies, rather than just lending support to the environmental organization. So communications, strategies, and resource sharing is critical to help us see our connections and build on these.
Thank you, Kenya. Naira, can you go next?
Build just relationships among ourselves. We need to treat each other with justice and respect, both on an individual and an organizational level in this country and across borders. Defining and developing just relationships will be a process that won't happen overnight. It must include clarity about decision-making, sharing strategies, and resource distribution. There are clearly many skills necessary to succeed, and we need to determine the ways for those with different skills to coordinate and be accountable to one another.
Wonderful. Thank you, Naira. And Martina, last principle.
Commitment to self-transformation. As we change societies, we must change from operating on the mode of individualism to community-centeredness. We must walk our talk. We must be the values that we say we're struggling for, and we must be justice, be peace, be community.
Thank you, everybody, for reading these. Okay, so just to recap, these are the principles. All right, so we'll go ahead and continue, but if you still have reflections or thoughts that trickle up, please do feel free to put them into the chat.
This slide might look familiar because you saw this picture at the head of the deck. So we're getting, these are actually, this and the following slides are the ones I was talking about that are going to be available for you to talk about, EJ, with your chapter mates. So let's start with the definition. And Brett gave this at the beginning, but I think that it's such an important definition that I'm just going to repeat it word for word. Environmental justice means focusing attention on the concerns of community members who are suffering because local pollution exceeds the norms in other communities that may be whiter or wealthier. And to put some concrete numbers on what I mean by that, there was a recent study that found that for PM 2.5 micrometers, that is, some of the worst unhealthy particulate matter, those in poverty had 1.35 times higher burden than the overall population. Non-whites had 1.28 times higher burden, and Blacks specifically had 1.54 times higher burden than did the overall population. So in other words, being Black was a stronger predictor of pollution exposure than being poor. But this is one of many studies that have found similar things. Thank you so much, Debbie. So this is what we mean when we talk about environmental racism, that racism is expressed by the amount of pollution that you experience in your community. And as such, it's really critical that that we center and empower local communities to determine their own destiny. That means, and this gets back to the principles that we just read through, that we need the fair and meaningful participation in environmental decision-making by those who are impacted by it. And that means we don't need to be centering corporate interests, we need to be centering Black and Brown lives. So as a CCLer, why should you care? In addition to sort of the obvious reasons that this is, you know, a human rights issue, it also relates to our core value. In the CCL value of relationships, we have this sentence: we listen, we work to find common values, and we endeavor to understand our own biases. So that means that it's our job to do our homework and learn about the values of all the different communities who are involved in the climate movement. And we have a lot of practice with this. We talk about connecting with conservative values, and it's another very important constituency are the people who are impacted by disproportionate environmental burdens. And there is a growing recognition across many organizations in the climate movement that climate solutions need to take environmental justice into account in order to both do no harm and to hopefully increase environmental equity. And as we make this point, we need to acknowledge our history and recognize that historical racism cannot be solved by race-neutral policies, and that the environmental movement itself has quite an ugly history of racism. As an example, the early conservationists really thought that the outdoors should be a club for wealthy white men. John Muir, who's the founder of Sierra Club, who many people have heard of, held racist views and thought that African Americans and Native Americans were lazy. For a more extreme example, David Starr Jordan, who was on the Sierra Club board of directors as well as being the first president of Stanford University, promoted eugenics and forced sterilization. And the Sierra Club themselves have actually published a write-up about this history as a way of trying to acknowledge it and move forward from it. And if you want more information about the history and how its legacy has persisted to the present day, I'd encourage you to check out Clara Fang's webinar called Diversity and the Climate Movement, which is available on CCL Community. So we won't be digging too much into this history now because that wonderful resource is already available to you. So given this backdrop of historical racism within the environmental movement that continues to the present day, there is a very real risk that solutions could increase the burden on communities that are already overburdened. And our best chance to avoid that is to make sure that such communities are meaningfully involved in making policy decisions. So again, it comes back to this principle of inclusiveness. So it is the case that CCL's goals and those of EJ communities are complementary. And of course, I shouldn't set these as completely separate because we do have CCLers who come from EJ communities, and we do have, you know, overlap between people who work on both issues. And we all want healthy, livable communities free from pollution and climate impacts. However, we have had sort of some issues where there's not always the level of trust that would make for the most productive moving forward together. And one thing to be aware of is that many EJ groups are rightfully suspicious of market mechanisms such as carbon pricing for a couple of reasons. One is that the market created the problems that we're dealing with. And so, you know, it's reasonable to ask, how's the market going to solve that problem? And there actually was a study that's been cited by a number of EJ groups in California, or a study from California that a number of EJ groups study, that talks about our cap and trade program. Well, I say our because I'm a Californian, that, you know, was correlated with a period of time where the inequity between pollution impacts actually increased. That is, that hotspots of pollution got worse. And so certainly cap and trade didn't fix hotspots. And, you know, there's a real concern that it could have actually made them worse. And we need to be aware of that as CCLers so that we understand that, you know, if EJ groups are bringing up concerns about our policy, it's not theoretical, that like there is research and we need to really dig into it and understand that. And we have seen issues in the past where some CCLers who are very, very enthusiastic about carbon fee and dividend have come in pushing carbon pricing in discussion with EJ groups and EJ individuals without really listening to objections, which is a great way to damage a relationship and create suspicion. So we're working on trying to build that trust back, and we need as many CCLers as possible to be in that process with us and, you know, working towards building trust and doing no harm. So hopefully I've convinced you, rather than scaring you away, that it's worth it to engage with environmental justice. And one of the best ways to do it, because EJ is so local, is to find out who the EJ groups are in your community and show up as a volunteer. And let me be clear, I should probably say offer yourself as a volunteer. Be willing to take no for an answer, because not everybody needs volunteers. But if the group would like a volunteer, then that's a way that you can engage and learn. And I would say also, before you even approach a group that's in your community, like we do with most things in CCL, we have some homework to do. It's important to understand that there is an urgent need to resolve injustices that are both historical and still going on today. So be ready to show up and listen. In CCL, we do lots of communications exercises, and the most important skill to practice for your meeting with your local environmental justice group is your listening skill, because we need to be coming in to learn and to support. And you can also do some studying on your own. So one term to be familiar with is the term intersectionality. And one definition of intersectionality is that a person with multiple marginalized identities may experience compounding discrimination based on these identities. For example, a Black woman may experience worse sexism than a white woman. And these compounding injustices can affect access to the resources that one needs to survive and thrive, such as those listed on this slide. And similarly, lack of access to some of these resources can make it harder to access the others. For example, poor health due to air quality can make you miss work, which in turn limits your earning ability, which in turn can lead to housing insecurity, which in turn makes everything else on the list harder. So understanding some of these challenges and kind of being aware of how they're playing out in your community is part of the homework to do. And growing your understanding of how environmental degradation and the consequences of climate change have impacted the lives of vulnerable people in your specific locality is also part of the prep to do. And we have resources on CCL Community about EJ in general. And I want to be very clear that CCL is not an authority on environmental justice, and we don't want to pretend to be, but community is a place to start. The important thing about this page is that there are external links and resources so that you can go beyond what's on CCL Community. For example, I don't know if anybody heard that beep. Anyway, for example, the HEMS principles that we went through at the beginning of this presentation are linked from that resource page. And now let's talk about what to do when you actually show up, now that you've done all this prep. Be curious, be respectful, build trust. Remember that those suffering injustice know it best. So let them lead the conversation. It's okay for your own perspective not to be heard. We're not showing up to make speeches, we're showing up to be volunteers. And that is to say, cultivate a spirit of service. And I basically stole this phrasing directly from Danny Richter when he's talking about EJ and some of his recent talks. And this is the next slide, if you don't mind, about cultivating the spirit of service. Thanks. And be ready, like I said, to lend support to a local EJ effort. And what that means is that we're not coming in as Energy Innovation Act evangelists. And this isn't just me saying this. This is, again, something that Danny Richter has said in the same thing in his presentations that he's given to some regional conferences recently that you may have seen, where he highlights environmental justice as one of six politically relevant groups, the others being Democrats, Republicans, the Biden administration, businesses, and other environmental groups. CCL as an overall organization is really recognizing EJ as a very important constituency. And as somebody who's active on the action team, I'm grateful to that. And I hope that CCLers will join me in embracing that spirit. So to reiterate, don't mention HR 763 or the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, whatever its new number is going to be in this Congress, unless somebody specifically asks you about it. And if you are asked about it, don't oversell it. Be ready to listen to concerns, because keep in mind that without a baseline of trust, there's no reason for somebody to take our word for it that this bill will help their community. So that's why we come in trying to build that relationship. And again, be patient. Remember that building trust takes time, and move at the speed of trust. One example that I think of with this is if you're going to a party and you're trying to meet somebody who maybe you would like to date, you're not going to go in and expect something to happen and be mad if it doesn't. It's very important that you go in sort of ready to be friendly and meet people and not bring your expectations, and then it'll usually go a little bit better. So that's my silly example of why it makes sense to build that trust up first. So let's talk about next steps. Hopefully you have some ideas from this already. We've talked about going out into the community and getting involved with local EJ action. We've talked, and now that you've seen this presentation and we've talked about how the presentation is available to you, we hope that you'll use it as a resource to share more information about CCL with your chapter. And again, just please don't let this be the end of your EJ journey, just one step along it. And I'd invite anyone who wants to talk about next steps that you can take to share them in the chat. And one of the next slide, or this slide that you're seeing right now, is actually the sort of placeholder slide that we put in the slide deck, where what you're supposed to do is then put an example of EJ in your local community. And I'm going to turn it over to Sue for an example of EJ in Rochester, New York.
Thank you all for having me, and Lisa and Debbie for putting together such an excellent presentation and kind of framing for the discussion. So I'm Sue from Rochester, New York. And first, let me give you a little bit of context to share the specific example that we've put together, right? So Rochester is a great place to live. I moved up here in 2006, and it is the home of Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony. And as such, we have a very long tradition of community engagement and social justice. And that cuts across all sectors of the greater Rochester area and all kinds of different fields. Okay, so fast forward, two of my friends decided to run for elected office, both African-American women. One was running for the New York State Senate and one for Congress. And they both wanted to have as a part of their platform environmental justice. And so she wanted to put together a document. And this document is intended for mostly white people of privilege to begin to understand. It's doing the work for ourselves to understand why our message doesn't resonate, okay? So this other woman and I, Kate really did most of the work. I consulted with her. She really put the document together. Then we gave it to my friends to review, because we wanted to ensure that the way in which we were speaking about these issues was comfortable for folks from communities of color. So that they gave us awesome feedback, did some editing, and we revised the document based on that feedback. So Rochester itself is like a classic example of an environmental justice area, like the whole city, which is ridiculous. It has very high poverty rates. This is not an accident. It's the result of redlining, which, if you're not familiar with, is a policy that denied housing opportunities to people explicitly on the basis of race. So the local African Americans are, I think, four times as likely to be living in poverty. Latinos are three times as likely to be living in poverty compared to white residents. It gets worse as you go further out into the suburbs, of course. And there are a variety of environmental risks that are legacy from manufacturing and other facilities in the city of Rochester. lead poisoning, brown fields that have, you know, industrial toxins, very high asthma rates. And you can graph this, right? And so you can see just in this picture, the poverty rates and how concentrated it is in the center of the city. So then thinking about how we talk about fee and dividend, this is household energy expenditure. Okay, so by decile. So the folks way over on the right, those are the wealthiest people in the country. And then you go to the poorest people on the left. And the percentages are the percentage of the income that is being spent on energy. So if you are in the poorest 10% of the country, which many Rochesterians are, you are spending almost 40% of your total income on energy, on heat, on electricity, transportation, if you're lucky to own a car, and most people don't. Okay, so this is a huge burden. And on the other end of the spectrum, if you're super rich, you're spending less than 3% of your income on energy, even though you use vastly more energy, right? Remember, this is not reflecting energy use. The rich people are using a lot more energy than the poor folks who often are living, you know, in substandard housing or apartments and so forth, but it's still energy is consuming so much of their income. So just to stay with the money piece for a second. So if you're thinking about fee and dividend, and this graph is showing you the impact of the dividend by decile. And CCLers of privilege are always like, this is great. Because, you know, low-income people are coming out ahead. And so you look at that lowest earners, and they're coming out about 9% ahead. And so you're thinking, fantastic, this is great. People are getting more money. So if you were spending, right, 40% of your income on energy, and you had 9% more income, you're still spending like 30% of your income on energy, right? So it feels inadequate to people who are barely surviving. And what I try to imagine is this family in a lifeboat on a rough sea with a hole, and it's filling, and they need to bail out, right? And a nice kind of luxury ship comes along, and they're like, oh, look at the poor people. I know, how can we help you out? Here, have a teaspoon. You know, and so now they're bailing with the teaspoon. And so I imagine that maybe that's how it feels to folks when we in privilege are trying to say, oh, this is great for you. And they're like, I was drowning before, I'm still going to drown, right? So the message of the dividend falls very flat. And instead, if you're thinking about what the folks in the community are experiencing is shorter lives, ill health, a struggle to survive. And so the solution that they want to see is totally a different lens than the way we're looking at it, right? They want justice to be at the center of the solution, not some like default byproduct of the solution. And here again, you can see the map of Rochester, and you can see how you're really poor, you're also experiencing a lot more asthma. So then at the end of the document, so this actually was, I don't know, several page documents. We just pulled out a few slides. We provided some resources and some specific community members that are living in the environmental justice communities who could speak for themselves and were willing to speak to our member of Congress or others in our community on these issues, with, of course, their permission.
Thank you so much, Sue.
Welcome.
Thank you. Lots of appreciation for you in the chat. So to close us off, we would like to invite you all to the CCL Climate and Environmental Justice Action Team. This is a picture of our action team. And right there, the little green line where it says remove bookmark, there would normally be a join button there if you haven't joined. So you can join that. You can see on the side, we have upcoming events. We have the monthly meetings every fourth Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern and 6 p.m. Pacific time. And so our next monthly team meeting is this next Wednesday, March 24th at 6 p.m. Pacific. So we post the agenda in the action team forum a few days before the meeting. You're welcome to add your own ideas and requests. And we have a fairly active forum, so you can post there with further questions, discussions, and people will tend to respond. And then I want to specifically share with you the Environmental Justice Toolkit that Lisa mentioned earlier. This is what it looks like. It includes resources and activities that you can do as an individual or things that your chapter can do as a group. It's linked on our Action Team webpage, but you can see where it says number 3, resources and activities for chapters, number 4, resources and activities for individuals, and also, as we said earlier, diversity related and not the same. So I wanna thank everybody for joining us today to talk about environmental justice. Please don't stop now. Continue to have conversations, continue to learn, find a local justice group in your area and sit, listen, learn, follow, help. Understand that this journey could be years in the making. And so when things like, you know, today's current events happen, that's not when you want to start the journey. You want to be able to have friends to support at that time. So I want to thank you for coming to the work. If you'd like to take our poll to see which activity you would like to prioritize after hearing today's talk, we'd love to hear from some of you. So it looks like the most people will be saying that they're interested in more self-education and learning about EJ issues and reviewing the toolkit to figure out next steps. And then coming up next is continuing to build relationships with local communities and sharing what we've learned with the CCL chapter and many more. So really glad to have all of you here. Really glad to have you continuing the journey. Thank you for being part with us, and we wish you well and your community as well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This was great.
Thank you.
This was really, really good.
Thank you so much.
Great job to the presenter.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.